the 702 app.
It's 18 minutes after 8, and I'm joined on the line by Kaya Sithole, who is political analyst. Kaya, thank you very much, sir, for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Good evening, and good evening to the listeners.
Excellent. So we've been watching this public spat that's been unfolding, I suppose, since Tuesday, when the Secretary General of the ANC came out on a presser to come and basically tell us what the ANC, NEC Lekgotla, came to decide about certain economical matters. And one of the matters was, of course, the issue of the Reserve Bank. Just briefly, give us the chronological order of events so that we can understand exactly what happened.
So chronologically, I suppose you'd have to take the conversation to way back in 2016.
Yeah.
And it was at around that time where the conversations around really the nature of the shareholding in the Reserve Bank started taking prominence within ANC circles. I remember in particular Mzwandile Masina, who is now the mayor of Ekurhuleni, put out a statement on his social media profiles, which was filled with factual inaccuracies around how the Reserve Bank was governed and how the shareholding is all about. And for me, the big problem with that statement is not the fact that it was completely inaccurate, but how so many people actually believed that what he was saying was accurate and then wanted for it to be changed. So that's really where you start with these particular problems. What then happened is that when we headed to 2017, the policy conference in the middle of the year and the national conference at the end of the year, the conversations around the Reserve Bank became very amplified within ANC circles. And of course, a lot of people simply say that it sounds unusual that you could have foreign shareholders, Germans in particular, owning shares in the Reserve Bank. We do not like it, so therefore it must be changed. Yeah. So that was the conversation around the shareholding structure. But what turned out to have happened is that by the time we got to Nasrec in December 2017, the question of the shareholding then got conflated with the question of the mandate.
Yeah.
And what then happened, unfortunately, is that if you look at the conference resolutions, the conference actually resolved to say that not only are we going to deal with the shareholding issue, but we also want to expand its mandate. So the reality here is that the ANC members in Nasrec signed up for this, and then this was part of the manifesto of the ANC in the 2019 general elections, and 10 million voters signed up for it. So when Ace Magashule speaks about it, he comes from a place of saying, well, I've got a manifesto that has been endorsed by 10 million people, so therefore I want to execute on this. So I think that's really what the tension is all about.
And of course, we've seen the public spat throughout the week that underscored a very strong difference of opinion in how that matter is articulated in the public space. And today we heard that President Cyril Ramaphosa, as president of the ANC, has come out to try and quell that spat and say that it's not helpful. What do you make of President Cyril Ramaphosa's statement?
Well, before we get to President Cyril Ramaphosa's statement, I think I probably have a particular gripe against the finance minister, in particular Tito Mboweni, and the ANC's head of economic transformation, Enoch Godongwana, because essentially on two levels we have to really call them to account. In that, surely for a party that is in government and really has to have an understanding of multiple issues, it is illogical to expect that someone like Ace Magashule would have the presence of mind to really understand what all these issues are. So you'd have thought that by this time, if the ANC is going to make any pronouncement relating to financial or economic matters, then either the finance minister of the day or even the president himself, or at the very least, Enoch Godongwana, is the person that signs off that particular statement and say, yes, this is definitely what we intended to say. I know what it means. I can defend it when people ask about it.
Yeah.
If the ANC is being held to account, and I can say that this is definitely what motivated the position. So clearly, either those rules do not exist or those three individuals did not do their job. So the statement came out and Magashule framed it in the way that he understood what he said is a conversation that happened. That is the first issue. And the secondary issue, of course, is that, again, how we ended up here is that Magashule is definitely right in his interpretation. This is what conference resolved in 2017, and this is what was part of the manifesto. So for me, the question that we should be asking is the economic intellectuals within the ANC, if they were so strongly opposed to this idea, they should have actually ventilated their opposition during that particular time frame. They should have then found a way to then motivate within the broader ANC structure to say, this is not ideal, this is not something that should ever form part of our conference resolutions, because the understanding amongst rank and file ANC members is that whatever becomes conference resolutions will eventually translate to government policy. Otherwise, why have the conference resolutions in the first place? So I do feel that those two individuals in particular have a lot to answer for, and for them to then sort of think that they can run a PR campaign after the fact is a bit of a meaningless exercise. Yeah. You can question how ACE handled it this time, but ACE probably said, okay, we'll say that it was part of this NEC Lekhutla. Clearly, that doesn't seem to have been the case, but it doesn't need to say so. You can issue a statement tomorrow to say, oh, by the way, to ANC members and to the country at large, this is what we resolved at the particular conference. ANC members endorsed it. We put in the manifesto, and 10 million voters endorsed it. So that really is the problem that you have currently.
I hear you. So it appears to me that there are two issues here. One, there is the political communication of a resolution that was arrived at in 2017 at the elective conference, where the ANC decided that they would be pushing, as a resolution, they would be pushing for the changing of the ownership of the Reserve Bank, which should not be conflated with or confused with the changing of the mandate. That's a different conversation altogether. There's the political communication of that. But also you're suggesting that there seems to, in that political communication, as legitimate as it might be for the Secretary General to couch it in the way that it was, there is perhaps also a problem of the understandings of the technicalities of the Reserve Bank, how it works and what it's for. Am I hearing you correctly, Kaya?
Yes, and unfortunately, that lack of understanding is universal within the ANC. The reality is that very few people have got the ability to actually engage on a granular level with really what the implications are of having a mandate that says particular things, and then what would happen if you change that particular mandate. So I think that inability by people like Enoch Godongwana and Tito Mboweni to really, really drive that type of financial education within the ANC structures itself has led to this particular mess, because I think for them, they cannot come out and argue that people have made the wrong call if they didn't give the people the right type of information to then inform the decision making. Even today, if you call the finance minister and said, so explain to people exactly what this mandate says and what the implication of changing it would be, you'd struggle to get the type of answer that we would want to articulate to rank and file members of the ANC so they can make the right decisions.
So your side gripe, particularly with Tito Mboweni and Godongwana, is that procedurally they were perhaps immature in the way that they handled what could be construed as a misannouncement by the SG about what happened in the NEC.
Look, I think the way I frame it is that for me, it's really a matter of, it is a bit pointless to wake up 2 years later and realize exactly what it means for conference to have taken a resolution of that magnitude. And I suspect that what you saw is that historically, the ANC has actually put resolutions in place that were probably impractical to implement. I remember the free higher education resolution actually was from Mangaung in 2012. Even the Reserve Bank shareholding question was actually resolved in Mangaung in 2012. But what you saw during the Jacob Zuma administration is that there was always this paralysis in implementation where people keep thinking that things will eventually happen. Unfortunately, with the contestation that has become so rife in the ANC now, the questions and the demands are far more immediate, and there's a greater sense of urgency. So people are no longer waiting until the president gets to the second term to start asking the difficult questions. They're simply saying, you've made this particular resolution, what is the implementation guideline? And you must also not undercut the role that the presence of the EFF plays in this particular conversation, because now the EFF always reads what the ANC has resolved to do, and they're always happy to expose that the fact is not the ANC is not staying true to its own resolutions. The land conversation is a classic example of that, where the ANC took a resolution and it was the EFF that tabled it in Parliament. And this one, if the ANC doesn't actually push ahead with it, the EFF will table it in Parliament only to force ANC members to actually then stand up and reject their own party's resolution. And you can imagine the political disaster that emanates from that.
Before I go to the statement by President Cyril Ramaphosa and his attempts at trying to quell this very difficult situation the ANC finds itself in, is I want to get a sense from you as to what you, I think, are correct in pointing out, the flat-footedness of Tito Mboweni and Enoch Godongwana in their reaction to what could be called a scant understanding of the political machinations of the Reserve Bank and how it it affects the economy. Could it not be interpreted, Kaya, as a much needed intervention by the two gentlemen, Tito Mboweni and Godongwana, given the potential economic catastrophe that the announcement by the SG could have created, if they didn't jump in and say, no, there is no change to the mandate of the Reserve Bank, albeit there was a resolution for the change of the ownership, could it not be construed or understood by some to have been irresponsible had they not done that?
No, I think it's a belated intervention, and as I said, this intervention is probably 2 years too late.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, in their intervention, they are putting President Cyril Ramaphosa in a corner here, because let's face it, there were a lot of resolutions that the party signed up for in NASREC in particular. So if we are then going to say with this one in particular, let us have a couple of champions who come out and say, no, this resolution makes no sense because of its particular economic consequences, then the members of the NC are then going to start asking the question, well, what about all the other resolutions? Are we now going to expect that there'll be similar pushback up against the things that we're now asking for them to be implemented? And then, of course, becomes a very topical question.
Indeed.
When you head to the NGC of the ANC next year. So I think the big problem here is, again, Tito Mboweni and Enoch Godongwana did not emerge in the ANC yesterday. They've been there for years on end. They've been part and parcel of the economic subcommittee of the ANC. They are the ones that should have fought for this thing 2 or 3 years ago, because they should know what the consequence of putting a resolution on paper is. People expect implementation. So for them to think that a PR campaign against Mahashule is going to solve what the ANC has put in the corner, the ANC has put itself into, is ill-conceived. It simply won't work, and you're already seeing it. Zandile Masina is probably the most vocal opponent of this, but he's not the only voice that's going to say, look, if you've decided that this resolution is not to be implemented, on what basis can I assume that other resolutions are going to be implemented?
Yeah, yeah.
And remember, and the ANC's NEC gets given a 5-year term to implement resolutions of a particular conference, and if this one they're going to start saying, we're not going to do this, well, perhaps the NEC itself might end up getting dissolved. We are trading in dangerous territory.
So I suppose what you've painted for us now, Kaya, is a crisis of legitimacy and consistency in policy within the ANC, and largely an ANC internal spat. But of course, any ANC internal spat has major implications, and more particularly if it is of the economic issues that we're discussing now, has major implications for the Republic at large. And President Cyril Ramaphosa has come out to say that while it is an ANC resolution to change the ownership, we don't think that it is prudent or practical to do it now. Let's speak of South Africa, the Republic of South Africa in the spat. We've had an interesting conversation about what's happening within the ANC and their considerations. What of the Republic of South Africa, and what do you make then of the president's intervention as we've heard today?
Look, I think if anyone has to be objective and analyze what the potential consequences of amending the mandate of the Reserve Bank might be, based on the current prevailing economic and political climate and the architecture that we use, it would be disastrous. And I think for me, I've always said it will not only be disastrous at the practical level, but I'm always going to hesitate to give these current politicians who do not know how to run even the basic elements of this economy to then give them additional powers that might even extend to printing additional currency. For me, that's always been the greatest risk. If we're talking about the type of politicians that have distinguished themselves in being able to stay true to to their word in being able to run the economy in the way that is expected and in the way that actually makes tangible impact and difference in people's lives, the conversation may well be different. But to then give them additional powers when they've done so poorly with the powers that they currently have, for me, it's a big risk. So I do think that in the South African construct as we have right now, it just simply doesn't make sense. But the key problem, of course, is that one could push back and then say, but the voters of the country that have just endorsed the ANC for another five-year term, this wasn't the manifesto that they voted for. So nobody lied to the voters and said that the ANC is going to do things differently. Cyril Ramaphosa read the manifesto on the 8th of January in Durban and said these are the things that the ANC is going to do if you put it into power. 10 million voters decided you must get back into power. So, of course, if I'm sitting in Ace Magashule's office, I'm thinking, well, I've got an endorsement, I've got a mandate from 10 million people, I've told them these are things I'm going to do. Well, of course, the people expect me to do those things. So there wasn't really this exclusion.
Do you think Cyril Ramaphosa's intervention today is a betrayal of the ANC throngs that have voted for the ANC, the 10 million that you're speaking about, or a prudent intervention by the president of the ANC in the interest of the Republic of South Africa?
I don't think Cyril Ramaphosa intervened today. He simply kicked the matter to touch, because really what he should be able to deal with is the fact that you might say today that, look, the issue is that we've communicated badly and we think that as a country it is not prudent right now to do this. But again, the question will come either at the next Likhot or at the next NEC meeting, because people are going to say, never mind that one specific resolution. Let us talk about all resolutions in totality. Are you telling us now that there's a list of resolutions that are not prudent for you to apply? What are they, so that we know what it is that we're endorsing by the time we head to the NGC next year? So, of course, in his capacity as a state president, he obviously had to come out and say, look, we do think that even though the political party that has put me here has said that this is the thing that they desire, at this stage, it is not practical for us to do so. But that cannot be a permanent state of affairs, because the ANC itself will start then revolting against him to say, look, you cannot then decide when you get to the union building that you're going to do some financial modeling on particular resolutions and then tell us through a press statement that some can be implemented or not implemented. That is not how the ANC works. The ANC is very archaic in the way it does things. It is very grassroots-based. So if you want to go and convince people that, unfortunately, guys, the type of thing that you wanted to do is not practical, you probably either do that at an NGC level, yeah, or at the very least find a way to communicate it to the branches before you issue a blanket statement that seems to co-opt the ANC into something that they can legitimately say they didn't sign up for. The bigger problem, as I keep saying, is that even citizens of the country and ANC members probably didn't apply their mind to what the consequences of the implementation of what people put in their manifestos are and what people put in their resolutions. And we're seeing the most explicit manifestation of that right now. So I do think that Cyril Ramaphosa has bought himself a couple of days, a couple of months, or even a couple of, you know, weeks. But the reality here is that this will come back, because as you can see, even on Twitter, the ANC itself, it is polarized on this matter, yeah, because, yeah, they are saying, we are the ones that interact with the branches on a daily level. We cannot go to the branches and say, yes, tell us what to do, but when we get there, we're going to change the rules and we just have to deal with it. It really just talks to the legitimacy of the ANC within its own members who have said, this is what we want.
So, and very finally, Kaya, so there's been really a conversation that asked the question, have we got a situation of policy paralysis here? Have we got a question of policy sabotage here? Have we got a question of policy confusion here? In a very, very, very short sort of way, tell me what you think we are looking at here.
I think what we're seeing is what happens when policy pronouncements and policy desires conflict with the reality that in the current South African environment, you quite simply cannot implement most of these policies. And for me, what needs to be done is that Cyril Ramaphosa needs to take a leaf out of Jacob Zuma's book. How Jacob Zuma dealt with the communications portfolio in particular is that if you don't want to implement particular things, hire the most incompetent ministers to be in charge of it so that you can keep blaming them for failing to implement. Wow. And you might just have to go for that route right now.
Kaya Stole, political analyst, thank you very much for your very frank analysis of the situation. Much appreciated, sir.
Thank you.
All right. What do you think? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts about that, yeah? Sure. Hey, I don't even know what to say. Give me a call, 011-883-0702. As the levels of the integrated Vaal River system continue to decline with the advent of the winter season and rainfalls becoming scarcer in Gauteng, the Department of Water and Sanitation is calling on